Good day. Thanks for joining us for another SAS Golfer podcast. Lucky today to be joined by Kerry Vereshchagin. Kerry's a local Saskatoon-based registered dietitian. Not many years as a golfer. I believe it's six or seven. But instantly making waves, I guess, in competitive golf. Has attended already in her short golfing career a national the Canadian Women's Amateur Championship just a couple of years ago, and brings to this podcast a wealth of information that I know for me personally is I listened intently and could have stretched out the interview for a good couple hours. Really good information from a female's perspective, from a registered dietitian's perspective, and on top of all that, a competitive golfer's perspective, and a wouldn't say a beginner golfer, but a developing golfer that's passionate and dedicated to the game. So, without going any further, please grab your favorite listening device, get comfortable. We're gonna run about, I believe this one's about 45 minutes. Really good discussion, and at the tail end, the last half of the interview here with Kerry is really good for the competitive golfers to learn what to carry in their golf bags for nutrition for during a round of golf, and how to, from a nutrition standpoint, how to perform better on the golf course. Competitive rounds, casual rounds are what they are. We all kind of do our own thing in casual rounds, but when it comes to competition, I really respect the educational or educated opinions that Kerry has based on research, based on her work as a registered dietitian. Amazing feedback and discussion here on proper nutrition to really help the competitive golfer for that he or she to perform their best. So off and running here again, Kerry Vereshchagin. Hi, Kerry. Thanks for joining us on another SAS Golfer podcast. How's things going in your world these days?
Good. I'm glad that the weather is finally warming up and we can get some exercise outdoors.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, unbelievable day today. Where are we today? The 30th. Someone texted me saying it's the hottest or going to be the hottest April 30th on record. So that's promising. It's tough. Tough not getting on the golf course, but soon enough, right? So
I hope so.
Yeah, so great having you on, and we've had some really good guests, and I know you're going to be great here today as well, and it's really nice to hear a female voice, a female competitor golfer's voice. Anytime in the golf industry, I don't care what province or state or wherever, so really appreciate this, and we'll do our best to keep this tight, but feel free, please, while we've got you. And again, a nice female competitive golfer's perspective in golf, in the golf industry. We can go on forever here. So if you've got time, we've got the time, basically. What were your, so going back to last Thursday with the reopen Saskatchewan plan with the golf guidelines, what, as you heard about them, read about them, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I think I was just grateful that golf was opening. You know, I have two small kids and all their sports are canceled. Yeah. So being able to get out and play golf, you know, first and foremost, I think is the most important thing. You know, I know I've talked to a few women, but golf and for men too, but it's a very social sport. You know, I know there's lots of women that play in tons of ladies leagues and things. And, you know, golf is a way to really socialize. So just being able to, you know, get on the course and do that is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because yeah, it's kind of women's competitive golf. It's a tough situation. I mean, we've talked before briefly, and I've talked to other female competitive golfers in different provinces. It's and as it relates competitive golf wise, and here in Saskatchewan, it's I've said multiple times over the last week. I mean, we've got such a short golf season here in Saskatchewan. By the time you get you personally as a female competitive golfer, get involved, have that first event of the year. Maybe that's where we'll start. What typically would be like? I've seen you're kind of, you may not believe it, but I personally, a couple of us think you're rocketing up through the competitive golf scene. Like you're doing really well, lots of success. But anyway, what kind of typically is your first event of the year time-wise? Like,
Well, I think like many, well, there really isn't a lot of women like me, I guess, in my age demographic, but I do have small children. I do have a full-time job, so it is hard to try to fit in lots of those tournaments.
yeah.
And I just, especially in women's golf, if you compare it to men's golf, there really isn't a ton of options. I play a lot with players like Dean Prosky, and he's always looking at all these different, men's tournaments, and there just really isn't a lot. So usually, I make time for the PA Northern, and then the Saskatoon Open, are kind of like the two that I usually play in, and then the amateur wherever that is. But otherwise, it's kind of hit and miss. Yeah, like there really just isn't a lot of option unless you're really willing to travel around the province and kind of have the time and the money to do that. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like you mentioned there, you've got two young sons there, and it can be costly traveling around, no doubt about it. And I like talking with some other golfers this week that it's I have a feeling, a few of us have a feeling that there might be more opportunities for women to get involved. Like it's I mean, last year alone, we brought it up in every podcast this far, but I mean, people, it's a big event. It's a popular event. People want to talk about it. But back to Dino's event there, the Scotia Wealth Management Open. Last year he opened it up to Carla Ognacon, amateur golfer, played. And you know what it comes to, Carrie, I think a lot is there's so many golf events. When you pool them all together, right? The Men's Amateur Tour, the PGA Saskatchewan, their tour. Pro-ams, pro ladies, junior events, junior women's events. It's tough. It all rolls back into, we've got such a shortened golf season here in Saskatchewan. I think a lot of times it's tough to implement new events, to start new events. Like
Well,
if,
yeah.
for example, yeah, like yeah, go ahead.
Well, absolutely. Well, especially for women, just because there are so few.
Yeah.
Like there's way more men competitive golfers than there are women. So, it's hard to justify, adding a bunch of tournaments and things like that, because it is a lot of work too. You look at, the ladies amateur last year, there was 13 competitors. So,
Yeah.
to run a whole tournament for 13 people is a lot of work. So, yeah, and I think that Dean inviting and his committee there inviting Carla Ognacon last year was great. I think that's a huge opportunity that needs to be looked at in this province, because I do think, there is so many men's tournaments going on anyway. Why not, just tack on a women's competitive division, or have some that are gender neutral that women could go play if they wanted to play the same tees. Maybe I'm just speaking that because I often play middle or back tees anyway.
Yeah.
And there might not be a lot of women interested in that, but I think the ones that are really into competitive golf, and it just might be another opportunity to get some tournament play in, because for me, I just find it so hard to do that. I've been playing for, this has been like my sixth year, and I've maybe played 15 tournaments.
Is that right? Yeah, that's over those 6 years, just 15 tournaments total.
Yeah, I mean,
Wow.
there's usually, like I said, mentioned those three that I usually can make time for, and then there's like the odd club championship comes up. I've played in the mixed a couple times. I played in a lot of corporate golf tournaments, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah,
So yeah,
yeah.
it's hard to get, that tournament experience. And just speaking from somebody like myself, who didn't grow up with junior golf or college golf, I've worked really hard to get better at golf kind of on my own, but without that tournament experience, it's really hard to learn, how to score in those types of environments. So.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it was Dino yesterday made a good comment. It's just straight up, competitive golf and social golf are two completely different things. So, it'd be unfortunate for golfer like you, female golfer, to have you almost, from what I'm hearing, you feel like probably you're almost plateauing. Whereas, the more advanced, and you're too young for that, but to plateau. So yeah, I totally hear what you're saying, where, more events, more gender neutral events. And yeah, there we go. SAS Golfer Podcast providing another voice. So that's perfect. Hopefully that word can get out. And I think, again, going back to the Scotia Wealth Open, just a model event top to bottom, where again, last year, Carla, Dino opens it up for some women invitations. I know there was last year, there was a conflict there. I believe there was a women's tournament in Prince Albert there. So,
Yeah,
maybe.
that does compete with that tournament. So I know that like probably a lot of women wouldn't be necessarily interested in that. But I mean there are others. There's the Central that always happens in Saskatoon. Like that one would be pretty easy to just open it up in the I forget what the third division there is from like the blue tees there. And but yeah, like I just think that there are opportunities that women could play because it's just not it's hard to justify adding more tournaments, like I say, for a smaller amount of players.
Good, excellent feedback. So, back to your comments there, as far as you mentioned, like you yourself, it sounds like by your feedback here in discussion, you'd have no problem playing from, for example, going up to Nipawin, playing in the Scotia Wealth Open, playing from the same set of tees that all the male golfers are playing from. Do you think you're kind of a minority, I guess, in saying that? Like, I guess as a whole, what would be equitable to have, to have more
Probably
women?
am. I mean, I can't speak for all women, but I do hit the ball a far way, so it doesn't bother me. If anything, I prefer hitting from those tees rather than the front tees because they, half time they take a driver out of my hands. But so I probably would be, speaking for a few, but I guess I'm more talking about, the women in competitive golf that are actually wanting to, compete and get better. Because if you're wanting to go to nationals, you need to be able to hit those distances anyway. And lots of times, like at the provincial championship last year, like the tees are, I believe they were pulled up, quite closer than they would be at nationals. Like I think doing more of those men's type events would more train you to play those distances.
Great points. Yeah, I totally agree with you there. It prepares you, and I agree with you as far as, the preparation. Getting our provincial women's golfers or junior women's golfers prepared for a national championship. That's common in the men's game as well. And overall, I know multiple times this summer, there's a group of the golfers just in general will maybe in preparation or leading up to the national championships, wherever the teams are going. It's like, a lot of the golfers that I talk to, they want to prepare as best as possible. So, yes, as much as a provincial championship may, the amateur body, Golf Saskatchewan, they're in a difficult spot where, again, Saskatchewan, small golf season, short golf season, but the golf community, I mean, they're in a tough spot where they've got to maximize the number of entrants, right? So making it too long is going to intimidate and scare off some entries in any of the events, men's, women's, junior, whatever. But
Yep, no, and I get that. But I guess that was just more my point that, for women that are, I guess, serious about trying to get better to do that, that would be, I guess, an opportunity to, if you're too scared to play in those tees, then I guess, you probably wouldn't be looking towards going there anyway. So, I don't think you're going to get a ton of women playing in those events, but maybe some of the more serious ones.
Gotcha. So how many national championships have you gone to? I know you went last year, so 2019, right?
No, I went. No, I
Yeah.
went in. Was it 2019? No, I went in 2017, I think,
Oh, that
or
long ago.
18.
Okay.
I don't even remember. No, I just went to one, and Gulf Saskatchewan invited me, so I don't want to make it sound like I made it because I'm just that type of person. But there was very few entries that year, and Gulf Saskatchewan had contacted me and kind of said, we see potential in you, and they were kind of
Yeah.
impressed by how quickly I brought down my handicap.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
so they invited me to go, and it was really, I almost didn't go because that was like the third year of being in competitive golf. That was probably like my eighth tournament I've ever played. But I did go, and it was a really, really good experience.
They are, aren't they? Like they're all the way from traveling with, other female golfers, obviously, and when you get to a national championship, there's it can be intimidating. We've all been there. I heard some comments there recently, like even on the men's side, like or women's side, like a Kathy Ziegler or I know Brad Phelps was making some comments on a off the hosel there not long ago, where he's really well respected. Him and like a Colin Coben, and they've been in multiple umpteen national championships, but it takes a while, whether it's takes two, takes five, whatever that number is in an at a national championship to really be comfortable and yeah, just to be able to compete. So with your I hear you have a somewhat of a very highly competitive background in another sport. What was that?
Volleyball.
Volleyball. Okay. Yeah.
I grew up playing volleyball, and then played with the Huskies for a few years as well. So that
Yeah.
really was my sport. And then I kind of just took a break and had kids, and kind of my second year of mat leave, I just decided I needed to get back into competitive sports because that's just who I am. So
Yeah.
yeah, and I just stumbled upon golf. So that's how I got here.
Yeah, right on. Well, what skills, like high performance skills from volleyball, like that's in my mind. I don't know the volleyball game, but that's when you're playing for U of S, university level. That's high performance. So what skills were you able to transfer over? Skills and mental skills as well.
Oh boy. I don't know. I think probably just my athletic skills in general, just hand-eye coordination and
Yeah.
competitiveness, and probably my I don't know, arm speed. I don't know. Does that
Yeah.
transfer into swing speed?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
Things
you
like
got
that.
that with your coach Clinton there, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd think getting some reps in. Like I've seen you at the driving range quite a bit, and you mentioned before our call here that you take pride in. And somewhat of a release with as we all do. It's nice to go out for a really good solid range session. So I would think, yeah, just the repetitions you need to get in volleyball are similar to your golf game. What's your strongest part of your game when you're going to
Golf
the
game?
range? What are you working on when you go to the range?
Probably my distance. I do hit the ball quite a far way. I've
Yeah.
only really learned to control it the past couple of years. But I'm still struggle quite a bit with short game. Clinton this last year has helped me quite a bit with my approach shots.
Yeah.
That kind of 50 yards in was really, I would drive it to 50 yards and then bogey. Like, so that has gotten a lot better. I've also just, Dean Prosky's helped me a lot with short game as well, just out on the driving range and things like that. So, even when I went to, the Canadian Amateur, my shots were just as good as a lot of these like elite players that I was playing beside. But it was my
Yeah.
short game that really let me down. Like I was four putting and three putting. So I've come a long
Yeah.
way in that respect, but that is still, a huge part of the game is scoring, and I'm still kind of learning to do that better. So,
Yeah, right on. Did you by chance have a chance, all of us in Saskatchewan had such a good opportunity in 2018 there to go in and watch at the CN Women's Open there, LPG players. Did you get a chance to get down there at all?
Yeah, I did. I got to follow, I followed along with Brooke for quite a while. Yeah, I had a friend that had a tent there, so we sat and watched. It was awesome.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah,
great
I guess.
experience.
Yeah, those any of those are like every chance, you know, I personally get to just sit there and watch how they're practicing, just their I find they work from the green out. I've been to a couple LPGA events, the CN Women's Open one in 18 there, being my very first LPGA event, and was just, you know, the driving range might be wide open, there might be one or two players after like the pro-am day or late in the evening after the tournament days. But there's, you know, it's standing room only in around the chipping and the putting greens. So it's, So you've got one area aspect to your game there. You, like you said, you drive it well. So it's, just keep hammering away. So that's a good lead in then, Carrie, to the practice ranges. That was one of the hot points of discussion here as the Reopen Saskatchewan plan, that the golf guidelines came out. How important is range, is just having a driving range to you personally? And I guess it's another lead in, Carrie, to your feedback. We'd all want to hear you as a registered dietitian. So kind of a two-part question there, like how much do you want and need, or your feedback on the driving range, ranges opening for your own personal enjoyment and development. And then from a golfer's perspective, you educating us listening and what you think, as far as your expertise being a registered dietitian.
In response to the opening plan, you mean?
Yeah.
The nutrition
like
part?
The original. Yeah. So, you know, if today was May 15th, I haven't checked the media. I haven't listened to anything yet. Today being Thursday, April 30th, but as of now, the golf course, as of what we see in the original Reopen Saskatchewan plan golf guidelines, yes, the golf courses are able to open with their list of guidelines on May 15th. But as of right now, this time and being, as far as I know, the driving ranges aren't
right.
allowed to open. So, yeah, how does that affect you personally? Like, I guess, yeah.
Well, the driving range and practice area is a tough one for me. Like I said, you know, I only took up this game 6 years ago, so I still practice quite a bit. Not only that, but I am a parent with a full-time job, so I don't always have the option of having a 4 or 5 hour window to go play golf. So I use that practice facility, especially at City Club where I go, because it's amazing. But you know, that I can go do a quick loop, or I do hit balls and work on mechanics and practice my shame and things like that. So that was a tough one for me. I really hope that one does change. I don't know if that's necessarily going to affect everybody. You know, lots of people are fine with just jumping on the course and playing and not practicing. I think it's important for warm up as well, you know, to prevent injury and things like that. But I as a woman or a female golfer, I don't think there's, I don't think you'll see a lot of females out there practicing as much as I do. You know, I would even say I'm like probably the closest you'll ever get to a Dean Prosky, a range rat, as he would say. So it is important for me. So I do really hope that does change. But like I say, at least we can get out and golf. So maybe it'll force me to not concentrate on mechanics so much and just start playing golf and get out of my head. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. The men's, our heads definitely, unfortunately, get into it, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? This is good discussion, good feedback, and I've made comments recently in the last week that it'd just be unfortunate for someone like you who's developing, who's growing in the games, getting more passionate, wants to get the reps and wants that whole development experience. I mean, you're an ideal going along here, Carrie. This is perfect. This is, I know what I want to hear, and hopefully the rest of the golf community wants to hear, where, you know, if we had, yes, the golf courses are open May 15th. So, but if by chance, you know, there's some modifications and they open up the driving ranges, it's like, wow, okay, great. You know, relief for a person like you, a player, competitive golfer who wants to keep developing, to have, you know, I guess full availability, full resources to work on your game. And then along that line, I got to be careful in these podcasts, all the handful of dedicated teachers who are the PGA of Saskatchewan members, we'll just talk about Saskatchewan. There's a handful that's their livelihood, to be able to go on the driving range, to have that range access, work with a Carey, work with a Scott, work with whoever, young and old, and, making the game that much better for all of us.
Yeah, and I can speak from experience there, because, you know, out of this 6 years or 5 years that I've played, you know, I've spent time with a golf professional with probably four of those years. So, you know, spent quite a bit of time with Brad Burney, and then I spent some time with Clinton Schmaltz this last year. And that is an important thing for me. You know, I do get lessons. I think it's important. And yeah, so that kind of limits yourself there. And you're right, like, that is their livelihood too. So I really hope that changes as well. I mean, I don't see how that can't be done safely. I think it could be. You know, I guess the problem here is that the driving ranges aren't open. So I hope that when the driving ranges open, that is also, reconsidered as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what, you've played at multiple different facilities in Saskatchewan, and, we've talked ongoing here, not necessarily today, but over the last week, about the rollout of the Reopen Saskatchewan plan being, given the government and the decision makers advising on guidelines here. There's a group in Saskatchewan here, an educated professional group. I don't know exactly where I was going with that. lost my train of thought. Too much podcasting here lately. Maybe I'm at the point where my head's full of just discussion, but again, this is working. Like you already pointed out a couple minutes ago, they're Carrie, like good feedback, good positive feedback. And double back here. So give the government the benefit of the doubt, as, you know, some of us considered it more of a blanket golf course guidelines, right? Two pages there in the Reopen Saskatchewan plan. It's tough. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Like there's small little par three or smaller par three facilities. There's sand greens, there's executive, there's 27 holes, there's 18 holes. There's so many different variations and so many driving range and practice area scenarios.
Exactly. Setups. Yeah. And I think every course probably has a different ability to, you know, maintain safety in a different way. So you're right. It is kind of a blanket statement. And perhaps in the future, you know, if the guidelines are just, you have to do A, B, C, and D, and let each course figure out how they can do that with the facility that they have.
Good comment. Yeah, excellent. And you know what, just right there, that's such a good comment, Carrie. It looks like that's what a lot of BC courses are doing, as some have opened, some have closed, some have reopened, and they're cut some area regions, I guess, in BC, they've kind of been back and forth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, some of the, they took it, some courses maybe took it upon themselves to try and, I wouldn't say cheat the system or, you know, go above the guidelines and, you know, just to get the people out. Obviously safety, everybody knows, is of utmost concern, but just try and make some tweaks here and there, and maybe just wasn't working, and government said, well, okay, it's, you know, let's just, well, you're going to have to shut you down.
Right.
But anyway, We're in a great spot here in Saskatchewan. The feedback's been so good that, again, you mentioned it earlier as we got on. It's just nice that we're opening. So let's roll into, if you don't mind here, it's your registered dietitian. And great conversation with Clinton Schmaltz here a couple of days ago. And he invited me out a couple months ago to one of his high performance seminars. I can't remember if that's the exact wording, but there was an educational breakout sessions or sessions for the golf community to go in and listen. And you were one of the guest speakers as a registered dietitian. So tell us what kind of your part of your presentation was I loved it. You did a fantastic job, by the way. And just talk about your being a registered dietitian and as it relates to eating habits, I guess, and nutrition in the golf industry for golfers.
Yeah, so there is, you know, a lot of evidence showing that good nutrition does impact your performance in sport. So what Clinton had asked me to talk about was more specific to golf. And golf really is a unique sport. It's very long and drawn out. You know, you don't necessarily need all this energy for these quick bursts, like you would necessarily in volleyball. But it is, a very mental game that requires a lot of mental and physical stamina and focus. So really, we talked about, the things you would need to do nutritionally to maintain that through an entire round of golf. So, having poor nutrition, for instance, you might not optimize your potential, can lead to things like early fatigue, lower swing speed, endurance, less concentration and decisions, skill errors. So there's all sorts of things that can be impacted by eating properly. And that would be before you start your golf round, maintaining good, nutrition and hydration during your golf round. And then as well as recovering after, especially for, if you're having multi-day events and things like that. So those were kind of the big things we talked about, meeting your fluid requirements and how important hydration is. Just being, losing 2 to 3% body weight, for instance, during a golf round can be linked to dehydration, but significant decreased performance. So, really talking about the importance of maintaining hydration during your round and how to do that, as well as the types of foods to eat. It is important while you're golfing, you should be really eating every 4 to 6 hours. And the types of foods to eat as well. You want to eat foods that give you carbohydrate, that give you energy, and some protein that makes you full, so you're not getting hungry out in the golf course, but also limiting, things high in sugar and fat that might kind of slow you down, can cause GI upset, especially if you're sort of gut upset, if you're in a tournament and things like that. So those are kind of the important things that we touched on. It was great, and kudos to Clinton for organizing that event. I really think that golfers would benefit from that. It wasn't just nutrition, but there was physical activity there and mental and all really important things that contribute to your golf score really at the end of the day. So
yeah, 100% there. That was unbelievable. And what I really liked about it was I'm a big advocate for, and it especially applies in everything we're going through here with the COVID-19, is supporting local. It's really nice. It's, again, like you said there, kudos to Clinton to recruit some local experts that can complement what he's offering. Mm-hmm. And Clinton admitted, like, he's a PGA Saskatchewan member, professional instructor and coach, and that's his expertise. Well, he recognized, to have a more complete golfer, well, let's bring in, the golf nutrition, registered dietitian like yourself, and the sleep expert and the mental approach to it as well. So yeah, it was really well done. We've all gone through it. Like, say a hot round of golf Carrie, let's keep it, I guess, competitive. Like, is there ever too much water, or a mix of water and a Gatorade type drink you can drink while you're out playing? Like, I've done it. I'm careful with, I don't know why I am, but it's just maybe I don't know why, but I'm almost careful not to drink too much fluids during a round. Is that possible?
Yeah, it is. It really depends. Like, it's very individual, and it really depends on your sweat rates and things like that. If you're sweating a ton and you're drinking a lot of water but not replacing that sodium, that can lead to different things as well. So, I mean, it's pretty hard to drink too much water, especially when you're out on a golf course in the hot sun. I don't necessarily think that would be an issue, but usually, you can let thirst be your guide. I was talking about this as well. Your color of your urine is another guide. If you have clear, pale yellow urine, you know that you're hydrated. Whereas if it's like bright yellow, you know that you're not drinking enough. So those would be some keys to kind of know if you're on the right track.
Okay, right on. Excellent. And another highlight, I guess, me personally from your session there with Clinton was the consumption of alcohol. I mean, it's you guys you educating as a registered dietitian, it's tough for you to educate golfers because whatever that percentage is, it's a social game where we're consuming alcoholic beverages. And what I got out of that session you did there was it was interesting to hear. And maybe you could repeat it here, but like say I'm going out to a national tournament, ideally making the cut. So realistic, ideally and optimistically, it's a 4-round event. So, but say I'm a more than a social drinker, or a social drinker, whatever that number is of alcoholic beverages. Like, is there kind of a point where it's like leading up to a national event or, a value, an important individual competitive event you want to do well in, you want to compete. I'm thinking more for like the younger golfers that are still in college and university. We can relate it to the Saskatchewan community again. I mean, it's so fun here in Saskatchewan up at Waskasoo Lake, and say the lobstick tournament's going on, and everybody wants to have fun. But at the same time, the competitive golfers, they want to get that, the lobstick open champion on their resume. Like, what's leading up to a competitive event, what's kind of some limits, I guess, and effects of drinking alcohol?
Yeah, so I guess it really depends on how competitive you're trying to be. I mean, alcohol will impair performance. Like, it is known to do that. If you're in more of a social game, if you have one or two drinks, it's not harmful in any way. However, if you're binge drinking, so if you have a tournament on a Saturday and you're binge drinking on a Thursday or a Friday, that can impair performance up to about 11%, and that can last. The effects of that can last for up to 72 hours. So, if you're playing in an event and then you go, have five, six, seven drinks and then plan to play well the next day, you might still play well, but just know that you've impaired your performance so that you probably could have played 11% better. So,
Right on.
if you are, serious about doing well, like, you really should avoid alcohol within 48 hours of competition. Alcohol
Okay, right on.
will cause dehydration as well. And, we had kind of talked about the importance of dehydration. Like, it's huge. So if you're drinking alcohol out on the course and not drinking water, you're just know that that is decreasing your skill performance. And, I think I had looked at some studies where, the effects of dehydration significantly affected, both distance and accuracy. And those players that I had compared in the study that were more hydrated had a four-stroke difference. That if you're trying to do well, that 4 strokes can mean a lot. So, something to think about.
So Carrie, sorry, Carrie, 4 strokes over what, a 4-day
One
event or
day, yeah.
one day?
Just
One
in that
day.
study, So it and the trouble too is with multi-day events is once you're dehydrated, it's really hard to recover. So you start your next day dehydrated, right? And so you're just trying to catch up the whole time. So you're just not putting your body in optimal performance.
Wow. Right on. That's, you know what? Perfect. Carrie, I really didn't want to get into talking about alcohol on the show here, but that's, it's important. Like I'm in that mid amateur division and I really do want to still compete at my highest, whatever I've got left in me at my age. And I go to some events and it's like, yeah, I'm a social drinker and as much as going out on the road, little road trip with a group of players, especially pro-ams is a really good example. I guess I love mm-hmm. playing in pro-ams where, I mean, you captured a pro-am or a pro lady there. I remember seeing a picture last summer, like you realize how fun they are. So, but you're out on the road, you're with a professional in PGA of Saskatchewan or Canada member and two or three other of your closest friends. And, you know, you just, you want to just sit and relax and
of course.
Socialize.
And that's lots of people enjoy golf that way too. So I'm not trying to put a damper on it, but that's what I mean. I guess how competitive do you want to be and what are your goals? And it's not just alcohol too. I mean, you know, feeding your brain fuel during your round also can have a huge impact. So, you know, you can train all you want and, you know, try to do the best you can do, but then you skip breakfast and don't eat for your whole round. Well, you're not going to do the best that you could have done.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is especially important with juniors as well. Because they just don't know, like, and I can speak from experience as a volleyball player, even in university, I had no idea, you know, the impact of nutrition had on my performance and the types of snacks that I would bring on the bench and things like that weren't anywhere near what they should have been. So I would wonder why I would get so tired. And it does, it plays a huge role. So, so it's not just alcohol. You know, fluid and making sure that you're maintaining your energy and things like that through food as well.
Yeah, for sure. Thinking back again to that seminar you were presenting at, a question from the audience, I guess, was, I remember the guy there talking about what happens when you have like a 7 o'clock tea time and you're not an early riser. So, and he tabled it to you. What can you do? I guess if by chance, I know, like you mentioned there, eating regular meals and especially a breakfast, but what if you got that early tea time and it's too early for your kind of body clock to wake up and everything? What do you do the day before? Is something you can eat?
Yeah. So ideally, you want to eat a meal that has a considerable amount of carbohydrates 3 to 4 hours before you perform. So if you have a noon round, that's no problem. And then you kind of want to have a snack leading up to it, you know, 1 to 2 hours before to kind of top up those carbohydrate and glycogen stores. But if you have a really early tea time, that's not necessarily possible because nobody wants to wake up at 3 in the morning to have breakfast. So what you could do, is the night before, you know, make sure you're having, you know, a really high carbohydrate meal. So like pasta, rice, those types of things. And then make sure you have like a smaller breakfast or snack, you know, still in that 1 to 2 hour range before. But then if you're not refueling as much that 3 to 4 hours before it, then your on course nutrition becomes even more important. So making sure that you're stocked with healthy snacks to be eating, you know, every 4 to 6 holes. Becomes a lot more important.
Yeah. Yeah, right on. So that's a perfect transition here. What is kind of an ideal, what's in the bag? What's a golf bag when you go to the golf course? Let's focus in on say it's the first round of the Women's Saskatchewan Amateur. You've done all your training, you got your reps in on the driving range and what's in your golf bag? Knowing that possibly there's not the best of options. You're not going to be eating a hot dog at the turn. But so what's in your golf bag like to prepare you for?
Well, depending on the time, I usually try to have some kind of like a lunch or meal. Usually something simple, like a peanut butter and jam sandwich or something like that works well. I try to pack lots of snacks like trail mix, fruit. Bananas work really good. They're really easy carbohydrate source and they transfer well. They're easy to eat. Granola bars, as long as they do have some a lot of carbohydrate with some protein. I've taken boiled eggs, and then I usually take some kind of easy munching things like pretzels or arrowroot cookies or something like that, just for quick energy. And then usually I always try and make sure I have lots of fluid. So I get those jumbo water bottles from Costco that are all insulated that keeps your water really cold. And I think that's important because when your water gets warm, you don't want to drink it. And so part of the reason we get dehydrated, is because we just forget to drink, or we choose not to drink, because golf's such a long drawn out sport. So when your water isn't that tasty to begin with, you don't reach for it. So having cold water, I often will bring like a Powerade or Gatorade as well. Sometimes I just mix it into my water bottle so it kind of lasts a little bit longer and it's not so high in sugar. But yeah, those are some of the my go-tos, but anything really works. It's the problem is when you're relying on the snack shack, just hoping. I mean, sometimes they do have some healthy choices, but they don't always. So, having your own options available is always a good idea.
No, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of halfway huts and snack shacks. There's not many healthy options. What if by chance you just forgot to load up your bag with everything you just mentioned there? What's your second best options, I guess, at that halfway hut? What are you looking for? Are you, like you said, you're looking for like a banana and some, yeah,
I don't
what's
know if
second
I've
best?
ever seen a piece of fruit at a Crash and Go station. That would be nice. But usually a sandwich, like I'll try to do like an egg salad sandwich, something like that. If they do have like a granola bar, a Powerade. Unfortunately, I also love those giant Rice Krispie squares. I might get one of those. That's why I try to
Yeah,
not
we
go
all
there because
do.
I'm
I
tempted,
know.
but they are delicious.
Yeah, post round hut, you'll be able to get the
Yes,
Rice Krispie squares.
they do give some quick energy, but you do tend to crash from eating something that big. But
Well, there you go. There's so many good dessert items out there. And no, if a person is to indulge, what hole would you recommend them eating it on? Like you said, there's going to be a sugar crash. So, is it a hole for the back nine, or you wait till okay 17 and get a little bit of a boost for
I would
coming down the
probably
stretch
say
here?
wait till after, just because. Well, I mean, a lot of different snacks that are out there are either high in fat or they're high in sugar. So you eat something that's high in fat and it's going to take a long time to digest and it's going to slow you down. So those are going to be things like your hot dogs, your potato chips, your muffins. A lot of those muffins are very high in fat. Whereas if you get something that's high in sugar, what sugar does is it gives you energy, but you will have a sugar energy spike and then you'll have a crash. And when you have that crash is when you start making your mistakes, right? So yeah. And really when do mistakes tend to show up in golf? If you're playing a really good round and you're focused, it's usually around that, hole 15, 16 when you start to lose that energy and that focus. So having a crash then necessarily isn't the best idea either.
No kidding, hey. Excellent. All very valid, very, very current, very just smart. I like this, like getting a competitive golfer's feedback and perspective. Add on that you're a female, add on that you're a registered dietitian. Carrie, I meant to ask this to you when hearing you at that session there at the Willows. How can the golfers get a hold of you? Do you have a website for people if they're interested in some kind of one-on-one or some group training or when it
I
comes to
don't.
nutrition?
I was really just getting kind of into this area. So people, if that's something they're interested in, can really just contact me personally. But yeah, I don't necessarily have like a website or anything right now.
Okay, right on. Yeah, no problem. If anyone contacts me, I'll be sure to send them your way. That's some important information. And like I said, there's a couple of discussions we've had here with other members of the golf community is we've got such a really mature and just dedicated and passionate group of young golfers, whether they're 14 or 15, a female golfer like an Ella Kozak, or golfers that are coming back after their university and college experience, and the Roman Timmermans and the Cade Johnson and guys a little older like a Justin Wood, and there's so many that they just want to remain competitive and keep developing here. So
How are we doing for
yeah,
time here,
how are we doing for time here?
Oh.
Sorry, Carrie. Do you want to some technical issues on my end? Do you want to talk about anything else while you've got some time here?
I don't think so. Anything, unless there's anything that I missed that you wanted to kind of talk about.
No, not at all. You covered everything, and it was just this is perfect. This is good discussion on what we're going to be dealing with, and as the golf course is open, and some great feedback on your keeping this business related as well. These podcasts, you're an ideal guest, and so
Hello?
sorry, Carrie. I think you're five. The fifth on the podcast here for SAS Golfer, and at every single one of the guests. I mean, I'll throw it at you as well. As you got an open invite to return anytime if you're into it down the road here. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, thanks very much for inviting me. And like I say, I'm can give a woman's perspective, but I'm not necessarily the face of women's golf. So, I think it would be great to hear, the Kathy Ziegler and Carla Ondaatje and Kim Browns too. So,
Yep.
they would probably also have a very good perspective, coming from competitive women's golf, because like I say, I'm fairly new to this, and I kind of come into it from a unique angle, but they're the ones that have all the experience around, tournament play and things like that.
Yeah,
So.
I totally agree. And kind of what I've heard right from the start here with you, Carrie, is obviously you respect those other female competitive golfers, and you're all going to learn off of each other. Like they're, people, if there's some female golfers listening in, if the Kathy Ziegler, the Kim Walker, this Kim Brown, like all those names you mentioned, they're going to be learning something from you as well. So, again, a really good thing for you to come on and just share some ideas and discussion. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Well, thank you so much for doing
yeah,
this.
absolutely. Thanks for joining us. And you and your family stay safe. And we'll definitely see you soon.
All right, thank you
Yeah.
so
Thanks,
much.
Carrie. Bye-bye.
Yay!